Don't let thing be the enemy of thing.
Unless we're a Dr. Seuss story, that is not our slogan. Welcome to the Maximize This podcast, the only podcast continuing to broadcast from an underground bunker in the wake of the 2016 presidential election.
You're still alive down there, huh?
I'm still alive in mine. I have my recording studio set up. It was the first thing I did once we got down here. Excellent. Like, forget food and shelter.
Well, luckily, you know, when you have these apocalyptic scenarios, the ham radio still works. So I'm really glad you were able to hook up your computer, your phone, or however you did it to your ham radio. So it's working really well over here.
Just bouncing it off the ionosphere, just like they did in the old days. As a shocker to no one, on this episode, we will be talking about our reflections to the 2016 presidential election. You and I have made a decision that rather than get too deep into the analysis of what happened and why and all that other stuff, which we definitely will at some later point, it's certainly been helpful for me to hear just unfiltered other people's reactions and how they're feeling about the results. And we thought we would just add our voices to that without a whole lot of commentary. I want to hear how Dinah feels. How do you feel personally about the fact that Donald J. Trump is going to be the next president of the United States? What are your thoughts? What's going through your head? What are you excited about? What are you anxious about?
All right. I'm excited that we're going to have a better relationship with Russia. And we might be able to take some foreign relations that we've made very adversarial and very, like, U.S. dominant and try to make it more cooperative. I think Trump really is, in my judgment, a win-win sort of guy. He makes deals. That's his job. And when Putin says that he respects Trump, I've been watching more speeches of Putin lately just to try to understand how he thinks. I think what he's talking about is a very similar thing that Putin does. He's a little adversarial, too. He's a bit of a bully, even to his own people. But he defines an end goal, pushes hard to get there, calls people on when they're not doing their job, and negotiates. Like, I see Trump as a master negotiator. I'm not saying he's the best, but he's always thinking in those terms. So I'm kind of excited to see our relationships with other countries change a bit, even with China. Like, he's already called up China. He's already now talked to Putin, and they've talked about how they're going to align to try to get rid of ISIS. I think that's a good thing.
No matter how you feel about it, there's going to be an opportunity for a different relationship with some of the countries in the world.
Yeah. As a short aside, I've been pulling up more YouTube videos to watch interviews with leaders and found one of Bill Clinton with O'Reilly 4 years ago. The first time Clinton had ever done an O'Reilly interview. 36 minutes long, and he just goes into every issue. And, you know, he's not president anymore. He doesn't have huge agenda, and he's just explaining how he thinks things work and why and what people should be doing. He talks about a wall. He talks about a fence. He says basically it's a good idea. They've put one in San Diego, and it's been pretty effective. And he does admit that there's a problem and something should be done with it. Now, deporting 19-year-olds who've been in the U.S. and came as they were 2 months old illegally would be awful. And I agree with that. But if you look at what Trump's saying, he's starting with criminals. He's saying he's going to round up anybody who's illegal and a criminal and either deport them or put them into jail, which is what I expected him to do. So far, he's okay. I'll put it this way. When I listened to this Clinton interview, I felt slightly rectified. I felt slightly more strong about my thoughts that Trump is addressing some issues in the correct way, I think. I have to maybe stop listening to him in any public speech where he's trying to rile people up. I just have to ignore that and ignore how disgusting the things that he's done and remember that the media takes anybody and makes this persona of him. I saw an interview. I'm still doing it, but I saw an interview of him 15 years ago where he's like complaining that they're starting to take him from this kind of person he is and make this other public image of him. So like I'm constantly trying to look for things I could like about Trump and things I could like about Hillary because I was really on both sides. I think I'm happy. I'm not happy, but I think I'm satisfied he won just because I think that people are going to learn some unexpected things from his presidency. I don't think it's going to turn out the way people are afraid right now. And one of the things that really drives me is to break down a situation into what's the truth versus what's apparent. So maybe I'm just fascinated because he's a really prime example of that, where the apparent is so awful. But I don't think the truth is nearly as bad as that. And so that's why I'm like following his initial decisions to see if he's going to follow through on what I'm thinking about that. So I'll get to the bad in a second.
Oh, we don't, yeah, okay.
No, I have to tell you what I think about the racism and all these awful things that are starting to happen too.
I will absolutely give you the chance to say those things. I was going to say, it sounds like your perception is that the actions that he will take in his presidency will not necessarily align with some of the rhetoric that he used during the campaign.
Absolutely.
Is that accurate?
Absolutely, I think that. But I don't mean that everything he said is a lie. I mean, I look back into what he's been saying over the course of a year and the things he's been consistent on. I believe he's going to try to put those into practice. So the wall, lower taxes. So this is another thing where the increased taxes on the rich versus lower taxes and corporate taxes, especially. No one ever talks about that, but that's one of the, I think, big problems that we have, the highest corporate taxes in the world. And that kills some businesses from, moving away from here. But here's another point where I feel justified because of listening to Bill Clinton talked about taxes. And, basically when you have a low growth, you want to reduce taxes, he says. It's economic sense, because if you just raise at that point, it's going to kill growth more. And you spur the economy, and then you find a debt repayment plan. And there was even a proposal that was put to Obama that he did not go for, and Clinton, who I think is very smart in economics, says he doesn't even know why Obama didn't go for it. So I feel better about the cutting taxes part. That was one of my concerns before, because obviously that would increase the debt. But I think at this point, with our growth being so low and our interest rates almost zero, I think that's actually going to be the right move at the current time. And hopefully, once growth starts, if it starts, he'll be convinced to flip his policies to kind of try to rein in the debt later. So I feel good on that.
What I'm hearing is that, from a policy perspective, if you go by, your perception of the kinds of policies that he is going to champion, many of them are ones that you're in favor of. Like, leaving aside the rhetoric, your perception of the things that he's going to prioritize. Some of the choices he's going to make on foreign and domestic policy are things that you agree with.
Yeah.
Or at least are interested in seeing how they play out it's going to be different from the way things have been done in the past.
Yeah, that's an accurate description.
So those are some of the things you're positive about. What are some things that you're worried about, anxious about, nervous about, concerned with?
Here's the thing. Half of America is concerned for me.
When you say concerned for you, you mean concerned for you personally or
no.
Concerned with the same concerns that you have?
Concerned with the obvious concerns of electing such an individual, that it set a bad role model for kids, that people are now feeling more audacious and doing racist things. My reaction, and it's only because this is how I react, when everybody feels a certain way, I look for the other side. Like, if everyone around me was a Republican and now is screaming racist stuff and buying more guns or something, I would be trying to talk sense into them to not, be so divisive. But my reaction is that if you have cancer and you don't have any symptoms of it, is that better and have it keep growing and growing? Or is it better to suddenly have a symptom and then get it? You'll freak out about it. You'll realize what disease you have in your body, which is awful. But at least now you can learn about it and find more of the things that you can use to fight it. Now, fight's not the right word, but learn about it so you can find a better solution. So I've grown up with people saying they want what Trump is now giving them for my whole life. So I understand why they're happy. Most of them are not racist. And the racist things that are now happening, I think there's now a chance for Trump to stamp that out by saying, look, I stand for what you want, but you can't do it in a racist way. He's already spoken out that, the gay rights, gay marriage has been determined by the Supreme Court, and he's not going to revisit that. Now, do you believe him? I don't know. But I'm hopeful that he's going to take a metered approach and use his leverage with these people to try to help get rid of racism. Yeah, he didn't create this. It was already there.
Hey, let me ask this question. If I provided you with two visions of Donald Trump, the president-elect, one in which he had said all the things that he said on the campaign, and one in which many of the more outrageous, sexist, misogynistic, racist, whatever phrases you want to use, that language had not been used, which candidate would you prefer?
The second one, obviously.
Okay, I'm curious. I mean, it's a legitimate question. I just want to know if there is...
Yeah, it definitely bothers me. I mean, it's one thing to ask what my preference is, and the other to say, how do I feel about the outcome we have? I feel hopeful. How I'm feeling right now is hopeful. Mm-hmm. In part because I really think that the things that people are upset about are either not going to fully come to fruition, or it's going to mobilize even more pro-social, pro-minority rights, pro-equality movements. It's going to even mobilize it more. And we've already seen that happening already.
I have to imagine the ACLU, the Southern Poverty Law Center, Planned Parenthood, and a lot of these organizations are going to be getting a lot more money and donations in the coming months and years.
I don't focus on this as much because I guess I try to be hopeful, like I said, but I do feel strong empathy for anybody who has been the subject of his rhetoric, let's say. Not that I think that he's individually going to do anything to them, but the feeling of nobody wanting to listen to your voice anymore and everybody starting to make fun of you or starting to threaten you, that is a real tangible outcome that's awful. And I think that's awful. I'm hopeful, again, in 10 years. 10 years is just because it's assuming he gets reelected now, you know, and then the next one would be a Democrat probably. And then you have 2 years to kind of fix the things that he put wrong. So in 10 years, I imagine things will be better. But for a while, that's got to really suck for a lot of people. Like if I were a female Muslim in this country, I would hate this outcome probably. I just feel targeted, and that's certainly running through my mind.
I hear that you feel, you know, concerned about the rhetoric that, you know, he used in the campaign. Do you feel like...
I feel concerned about how some of his choices will impact people. And I feel torn about it because a lot of them are intended to fix systemic problems that we do have. And there's no easy way to fix some of these problems. Mm-hmm. Still, if any of my friends are affected, I'm going to hate him for it, of course.
Even if his policies don't align with like some of the words he was using and some of the stuff that he was saying on the campaign, like, do you worry that that will continue into his presidency, that he will continue to sort of speak in that way, even if he doesn't act on it in the...
I'm not that worried because, I mean, so now he can start going into the people he's appointed and he's thinking about appointing to his cabinet, right? It depends who he appoints to these cabinet positions, how I'm going to feel about it. I'm looking to him to start making rational choices.
Wait, pause. I have to pause. Is the unspoken phrase there that he hasn't made rational choices up to this point?
I am hoping he will. At every point, he made good strategic choices according to his situation and goals, I think. He went through 3 campaign managers because he saw things weren't working and the last one stuck. So Reince Priebus was one of those guys with him all the way the last 2 months. He was the head of the RNC. And Donald is the anti-establishment candidate at odds with the RNC. So what is the first thing he does? He makes Reince Priebus, the head of the RNC, his chief of staff. Reince, who has good relationships with the Republicans in Congress and can smooth things over and get things done. So that's a smart move.
You think this is going to be like a team of rivals kind of thing where he brings in a bunch of people with competing views and tries to get the best from them?
Yes. If he's making deals as a businessman, what do? You bring in people that can make things happen. He knows that he himself doesn't have as good pull with the Republicans in Congress. So he's going to bring someone who does and then align with that person on how things should be done and how to make this work. I think it's very smart.
Okay. You feel like the team he's going to put together will be one of people who are competent in their fields and can either work together or will provide a variety of viewpoints that he can then choose between?
I'm not sure. I'm skeptical. I have some concerns, but that one I'm happy about. I got to keep looking at his actions and be like, well, that action was okay. That action was okay. And he said in an interview he's probably not going to tweet very much. As I predicted, he was tweeting a lot when he had to get people motivated. Now his job is to run a country. He doesn't have to tweet. He's not going to tweet except when he feels he still needs to interject and get people motivated.
So let me paint a situation for you. So let's say, I don't know, pretend there's a Supreme Court justice that he wants to appoint and the Democrats in the Senate filibuster the confirmation. Do you foresee that he's going to tweet things like, sad Democrats in the Senate won't give me up or down vote, need to be removed from office? Like, do you think he will resort to that?
Yeah, that would be funny, though. I think he might. I mean, I think what would be inappropriate is for him to single out one name and call him a bad word on a tweet. And I'm hopeful he will not do that anymore.
So that's the line. That's the line we're drawing. As long as he doesn't single one person out for being called a bad name.
My last reaction, I suppose, is I was personally just taken aback by how severe people's reactions were on Facebook or in talking, you know, just friends talking to you about the outcome. I guess I can understand why. It's not just, like you said, it's not just a sporting event where your team lost. It's something that's going to impact the lives of lots of people that you care about, that you've been fighting for, and you've seen progress for all of these last few years or decades even. And you feel like it's a huge setback. And you'll tell me more about, I think, that side. I was just really astounded by how surprised people were and then how grieving they came across.
Like the intensity of the intensity of the result. Like, yeah. Would you say the intensity of the feelings was stronger in magnitude than, say, the losing side in 2008 or 2012?
Yes, exactly. That's about what I was thinking of. I just can't remember in recent memory. Maybe it was the crying as opposed to anger. I think that's what it was. It's a sadness that surprises me. I would expect anger and frustration, of course, but the type of feeling was really surprising to me.
Have you looked into, like, getting a better sense from people, like, why they felt that way?
I mean, I haven't, because I think I kind of understand factually. I just don't feel that emotion because I don't resonate to the huge downsides that they think will happen, because I don't think they'll happen. Maybe I think I understand it, but I just don't understand it at the same time. I don't know. Which is why I'm talking to you. I'm very happy to be talking to you. How are you feeling, Todd? Are you happy or sad?
I am sad. First and foremost, I feel saddened by this result. I feel like, completely independent from the policy differences that were presented between the two candidates, which I thought were stark, the way in which the campaigns were run and the language that was used by both sides seemed to present to me a very clear choice between two very different visions of our country.
Mm-hmm.
One of those visions, very clearly, I preferred over the other.
Which one?
The Clinton side.
Okay. I just wanted to hear you laugh.
If it wasn't clear before that.
It's very clear.
And so, while I can understand that people might have had legitimate policy differences with some of the things that were presented by the Clinton campaign, you know, just the way and the tone that the Trump campaign was won just seemed so different from the country that I thought we lived in and the way that we approached issues of solidarity and multiculturalism and togetherness.
So your shock is not at the outcome so much as what it uncovered.
Yeah, like if you had, for example, if Mitt Romney or Jeb Bush or Kasich had run and won this election, I'd be disappointed that we didn't get the result that I would have preferred. But, you know, I get that there are legitimate policy disagreements between, you know, sides in this country. And, you know, okay, we'll work it out. But, you know, the tone of things is still sort of approximately civil. But here I'm facing a situation where I'm left with a dilemma. I'm left with two very unpalatable options. The first is that a significant portion of the country is receptive to arguments that I would call nationalist or intolerant of, you know, a good portion of the country, and that was the message of Trump's campaign that people picked up on. Or a significant portion of the country doesn't agree with those things, but was willing to look past those things in order to get policy results that they were in favor of. And I really hope it's the latter more than the former, but I don't have an answer on that yet. And so I guess I've been made aware that there are some things that in politics that I thought were unassailable, that I thought were just absolute red lines that you don't cross without being punished by the electorate. And I saw those red lines just absolutely obliterated with no consequence. And that is something that I'm grappling with right now, and I think I will be grappling with for months ahead.
Just so I understand better exactly what you mean, when you say nationalist and intolerant policies, specifically intolerant, what are you referring to?
I think a general language of suspicion of foreigners in general and Muslims specifically. I think an attitude of isolationism, of like that America First policy that he talked about, that we're willing to prioritize America's, you know, needs regardless of the consequences to the rest of the world. So things like, you know, withdrawing from climate change treaties or things like that, where we're basically saying, you know what, this is inconvenient for us, so the rest of the world can deal with it.
Part of your frustration is that so many people espouse America First. I'm trying to break that down into which pieces really get to you and really are the most upsetting.
Specifically, Muslims as a group being somehow suspect, when I believe that that's not at all valid, that immigrants and, you know, undocumented immigrants specifically pose some threat to this nation that is exaggerated. And so a demonization of that group. the things that were spoken about women in the language and demeanor that was used in the campaign, and the very warranted fear of LGBT groups, you know, with the selection of Mike Pence as the vice president, that their relationships, that their marriages would potentially be under threat. So, you know, across the board.
Does it give you, just on that last point, does it give you any relief what Trump said, that he wouldn't touch that issue on marriage equality?
I can't assign any truth value to anything that Trump says. I'm basically only focused now on the things that he does.
Right.
Even that's not entirely true, because the things he can say can have impacts. So maybe I'll take that back. I can't trust what he says. There have been too many times where he has said one thing and does another, or that the reasons he is going to do something are different than the actual reason, that I just can't trust anything that he says.
I understand that. Do you trust that he has certain priorities that he will push to execute, and other issues that he holds as lower priority? And maybe you have some predictability on the core things he'll do, which you probably disagree with. So the things that he's predictable on are the things that you dislike.
So that's another thing that I'm concerned with, is that there is no predictability in his campaign. I can't say that there is anything that I think he is going to do or not going to do, like in the language of the last week.
Do you think he's going to build a wall?
I don't know if he's going to build a wall. I don't know if he's going to impose a religious test for people coming into this country. I don't know if he's going to attempt to deport 11 million people from this country. I literally do not know what things he is and is not going to do. And
do you think he's going to push building a wall?
I don't know. I don't know how to emphasize this in clearer language. I don't know. Like, if you ask me.
Well, so no, it's a different question. It's not a question of will he accomplish a wall, but it's a question of will he prioritize and push for it. And also, will he prioritize and push to deport or jail illegal immigrants who have committed crimes?
I don't know.
Not even that. You have no predictability. Okay.
I have no predictability. I have no idea what things that he is going to prioritize over what other people might, and second, what things that, you know, the Republican Congress is going to sign on for. Like, maybe he says we are going to build a wall, but it's just a non-starter in Congress. I know for a fact he said that he's interested in term limits for Congress, and Mitch McConnell said that that's a non-starter, that that's not going to happen. So, you know, there's already conflicts that are brewing between what Trump thinks he's going to do and what the Congress is going to do. So not only do I not know what Trump is going to prioritize, but I don't, even if I knew, I have no sense of whether these things are going to happen or not.
Okay.
So that's what I'm feeling. It's just an enormous amount of uncertainty, because unlike any political candidate I can imagine in recent memory, I've never seen someone more willing to say something for whatever political expediency that grants him.
So the first reason you have no predictability is because he's such an outsider, he doesn't even know what he can or can't do. And the second reason you're saying is that he's obviously said one thing, said another thing so many times that you don't see any correlation between his intent and what he's saying.
Exactly. Those two things are spot on, that I don't feel like he has a good sense of what he is capable of doing, regardless of what his priorities are. And two, I don't trust that the things that he's said in the past necessarily reflect what his priorities are for the office.
Gotcha.
Like, and that's somewhat, that's, you know, for the benefit of the doubt, that's something that all politicians deal with, that you say things on the campaign trail that you may or may not be able to deliver on. And I get it, it's politics, but just the things this time that have been promised are so offensive.
Let me ask you this question now. Mm-hmm. You gave me a similar one before.
Okay.
Let's say you had two Trumps. I want to understand which part of him drives you more. Is it the way he talks, or is it the actual policy? So Trump A talks just the way he does, but his policies would pretty much be safe, okay policies. You have great predictability that they will not be the extreme bad policies.
Yep.
Even if he talks about them, you know predictably that he will be moderate.
Right. He talks a big game, but he takes approximately expected Republican positions on most issues.
Right. Exactly.
Okay.
Now you have a second candidate, Trump B. Let's call him Mitt Romney. Super polite, you know, looks like a president, has good hair, but let's just pretend that you actually had zero predictability in what he would do. So he might be moderate Republican. He might impose religious tests for Muslims and deport everybody. You have no idea, no predictability, but he's a very polite, stand-up kind of person. Trump B.
Right.
Which one would you prefer?
My concern is more with the policies than the rhetoric, right? Like, I get that you can have someone who is, you know, I don't know, a Jesse Ventura or, you know, someone like that who's like braggadocio and brash and unpolished and, you know, shoots from the hip and speaks off the cuff and whatever other cliches you want to use.
Yeah.
While at the same time, like, just being, at the end of the day, doing normal-ish politician things.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
That's a long walk to get to. I believe I'm more concerned about the unpredictableness of the policies that are going to be implemented than I am about necessarily the rhetoric that surrounds them.
Got it.
And let me be clear, the rhetoric is appalling.
Oh, yes.
But at the end of the day, I care more about the actual laws and executive orders and treaty negotiations that we're going to get into than the way we're going to talk about them.
What do you think is the chance that the version of Trump that you know might eventually start to approach someone like Trump A that we described? Are you hopeful? Is it not even in your realm of reality, of possibility?
Again, I hate to use this word hope, because hope is not a plan. But hope for the best and prepare for the worst, I mean, I think is the attitude that I and a lot of people I know are sharing right now, that it's...
Which is why you're recording out of a bunker, I get it.
Which is why we're in the bunker, yeah. I hope that at the end of the day, some combination of Trump's intentions not being aligned with the rhetoric that he used on the campaign trail, combined with the actual realities of governing and the difficulties, you know, that will be placed before him for the things that he wants to pursue, are sufficient to blunt the impact of his presidency over the next 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say hope, because it's not going to happen unless people are mobilized against it. It's going to take effort to constantly resist the efforts that he may potentially pursue. And I think it's critical that, you know, we draw a line of the things that are and are not acceptable. You know, like if you have a position on an economic policy, or if you want to take your shot at reforming the healthcare system, I mean, you're in control, right? Like, you get to write the laws, and, you know, so far as they are constitutional, then we'll fight it and deal with it. Like, that's the way our system works. But I am incredibly nervous about things that could represent fundamental shifts in the way our country works, like consolidations of power or threats to civil liberties, or, you know, any attempt to permanently damage the institutions that govern this country.
I guess what I'm trying to figure out is, if there's such great, when there's such great uncertainty in something, you'll have different people have an instinct or a draw to one of the outcomes, maybe the average expected outcome, maybe the most positive outcome, and maybe the most negative. And you yourself, you've said, it's not that you know that he's going to do these things. You just, you don't know. And why is it, do you think, that you are so focused on the potentially most extreme negatives? And if you didn't care and you were divorced from any outcome, if you were an alien looking at this and just curious, you might say the expected result is not as extreme, but there's a huge fear and everyone's fixated on this potential extreme. Why do you feel viscerally that it's such a certainty?
I don't feel that it's a certainty, but like I said, this election has shown us that low probability outcomes can happen. And so the fact that there are people who believe that it might not be that bad doesn't give me comfort, when there are plenty of people who would have told me a year ago that the chance of, you know, Trump becoming president is not that high. I can't discount low probability outcomes anymore when those low probability outcomes have the potential for upending the country that I live in. It sounds like you're confused as to why I would be so worried about these outcomes. And the reason why I'm worried about these outcomes is because they're the very outcomes that Trump has talked about on the campaign that I think would be, if not deal breakers for the country, like serious damage that would take decades to undo.
I guess what I'm trying to do is separate out your expectation of what will happen versus your reaction to what would be the worst thing to happen. And because you said before you really don't know what he'll do, I am assuming that your actual expectation of what will happen is more moderate than what you're afraid of.
By definition, I'm going to be unhappy with the result because this is a Republican president and a Republican Congress that have espoused policies and views that I disagree with. That's going to happen no matter what. And my only hope is that the actual outcome falls into that normal range of disappointment I would feel with, you know, the policies and positions that a Trump presidency or Trump administration would take. But in addition to those things, like in addition to the normal concern that I have over those policies and the negative effects that I believe they would produce, I also have to worry about actual damage to our governmental institutions that is either irreparable or difficult to undo.
I see your point. That makes sense. The fact that it is now on the radar as a thing to worry about that normally with another president would not really be on our radar, that it just introduces a new realm of concerns. I understand that. I think the useful thing for me in this conversation, since I always have the tendency to jump in with solutions or try to reframe things for them, is I don't always let them fully explain how they're feeling about something and just listen to it. There is a great article that we will post that talks about how to relate to another side in a supposedly revolutionary way to listen to someone else who disagrees with you. And what they propose to do is you should just listen to them. And you listen and you just inquire. And so when they say something you disagree with, rather than disagreeing or rather than pointing out why they're wrong, I would just say, well, tell me more about that. That's it. You do the exact opposite of what your instinct is. And you just ask for more. I mean, you're A, helping them think through what they think. Or B, maybe learning more than you knew before. And C, you help them feel heard so you have a more fruitful discussion in the end. Because you can actually know where you're common ground is and know you have a trustful discussion going. So even I felt that with you, Todd, because as we were in the initial mode of, you know, let's just talk about Dinah's point of view and how she feels, and let's just talk about Todd's, I was completely in listening mode, and it was very easy to not feel defensive and to just hear a different point of view. And at the end, as we started to tie up, we started to go back and forth and challenge each other, and it actually got a little bit more combative, which is our usual style. This is actually interesting to feel that difference.
It's hard to resist those urges sometimes.
Very hard. Thank you. So I guess especially when there's such a huge division of views like it is today, I think it's a really useful tool, and I may try to employ it more.
No matter how you voted in the election, there is 50% of the country that thinks differently from you. Our show right here is a one-to-one microcosm of the country, of, you know, people who prefer one direction versus another. And
come on, you and I agree on everything. We're not that far apart.
I know. That's the funny thing. I'm hoping that this conversation, that this like kind of reflection of just pure listening, provides some insight into at least some sense of, hey, there are people out here that think differently, and it's worthwhile to understand what those perspectives are. So we'll dive more into the details, I'm sure, in coming shows. For now, thanks for listening. We have a discussion page set up on Facebook at facebook.com/maximizethis, as well as Reddit at reddit.com/r/maximizethis. We'd always love to hear feedback on the show and any ideas you might have for new topics.
And you can visit our website at www.maximizethis.fm. Check out news, new episodes, bonus features, and tell your friends that you like our show, if you like it. And if you don't, tell them anyway.
And if you can, please leave a rating and a review on iTunes. I checked recently, we have a lot of reviews on iTunes, and it's really great to see that people are getting a lot out of the show. So if you haven't done that already, it would be a big help.
And until next time, don't let pretty good be the enemy of perfect.
When you listen to Ryan's, how do you say his first name?
Believe me, I'm glad you said it first so I didn't have to. Reince Priebus? Reince?
Ryan's Priebus.
Priebus.
Reince Priebus.
I said it right.
It rhymes with Heinz ketchup.